We are back in the Torch Center for this incredibly special podcast. It's one of the highlights of the year so far. One of the most exciting, anticipated podcasts that I've been waiting for a very long time to have here at the Torch Center. I have two friends, two guests, two special, beloved, beautiful humans who are here from California. They flew to the Torch Center because they wanted to spend time with us and they wanted to record this podcast. And boy, are they deserving. I'm here with my dear friend, Ron Cardos. Hi, Ron. How are you?
I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm on your podcast. I'm honored.
Oh, wow. Well, okay. I am honored. Yeah. And Bruce Licht. How are you, Bruce?
I'm doing great. Rabbi, it's an honor to be here. I've listened to you for years, and it's just surreal to be sitting here with you recording this.
Awesome. These two fine gentlemen are dear friends of mine personally, dear friends of Torch, longtime listeners. But I know you, the listener right now, you probably don't know them. But these two are incredible, incredible people. And they did something so radical, so utterly unique, so transformational that I said, you have to come to the Torch Center. You have to tell your story. So I'm going to give you just a little background here. Ron and Bruce, they sense the problem. And the problem is that there are millions of Jews in America and millions of humans in America and billions of people worldwide. And at some point in everyone's life, they have to wrestle the question of, you know, what's it all about? What's the plan? Who did it all? What's the purpose? What's life all about? Is there a God? And if there is, what to do about that? And that's a very important question that eventually every thinking person has to wrestle with, has to grapple with this dilemma. And of course, we're fortunate enough to have a very long history and incredible examples. And we have Abraham in our history, and we have the sign of revelation, and we've been trained, and we've really have a really rich history and heritage to fall back on, and we're kind of a leg up. But what if there was a way to give people a little snapshot, in a small message, a small encapsulated short message, a compelling reason to believe in God, a proof in God? That was their idea. And they wrote this incredible book that I have in my hand here called Elevator Pitches for God. And it's 70 essays written by thought leaders. And each essay is just one page, and each essay is a persuasive argument to believe in God. That was their idea. That was their initiative. That's what they undertook a couple years ago, and they just pulled it off, and it's incredible. I have the book here on my desk. It's absolutely gorgeous. So first of all, I want to give a big yashar koach to you two, Ron and Bruce, for doing this incredible service for the Jewish people and for really all of humanity, and really fulfilling the mission of trying to bring the knowledge and awareness of God to the world.
Thank you. That's so nice of you to say that.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
I want to hear more about the project, but I want to kind of give the listener and really give me a little bit more of your background. You know, what's your story? You know, what's your kind of religious upbringing? How things developed? You know, what was your spiritual and religious maturation process? And what led you to undertake this incredible initiative? So we'll start with you, Ron.
Yeah, I grew up I definitely identified as a Jew. I really wasn't bar mitzvahed. When I went to shuls, it was a reform shul. I was in reform shuls for 50 years. My wife and I joined a local one. And, I was really looking for to learn Torah. I mean, I just loved it. But I wasn't finding much there. But I was, sticking it out and just trying. And needless to say, in the 2016 election, it became not about Yiddishkeit, but it became about elections and politics and all that stuff. And that's not what I was there for. So I went to a local Chabad, walked in. I said, I don't know anything. I'm completely ignorant. I don't know my Aleph Beis. I knew nothing. And they were very warming and welcoming. And they gave me books to read. And I read. And I was blown away. I was just, I read R.E.A. Kaplan, went through his stuff, read Rabbi Nachman. I started studying the Parsha, started the podcast. I couldn't believe it. My mind exploded. I was like, this is amazing. How come we didn't hear about this stuff before? And anyway, it's now, I've been 6 years. I've been taking classes all week. And I can't tell you how wonderful my life has changed. It is so rich. I wake up, I can't wait to get up. It has meaning. It has purpose. I know exactly what direction is. I'm trying to improve my own personality and my own self. And I think I've changed quite a bit. I mean, my friends a long time could probably tell me for the better or worse, whether they like it or don't. But anyway, so I attend a local Chabad in Northern California, and that's Chabad NP. in San Mateo, and it's just been a wild ride. And
so you're telling me that you went 50 plus years going to shul on a regular basis, but you weren't getting a lot of Torah, and you really have a strong foundational background in traditional learning. And now in the past, just what, 5, 6, 7 years, you've been studying all the time. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, pretty much. Just it's amazing. If you guys are not looking at this stuff, I recommend you open a book and just start reading. And, you know, hey, I'm lucky it comes – the love in me is, you know, it's built into every cell. But it's amazing stuff. And the Jewish people out there don't know it. They don't know it. And if you don't study the real stuff, which is out there, you're missing the pleasure and the joy of our heritage, which once you get into it and once you form a community and you study with other people, it's the joy level is just off the charts. And that's the truth.
So tell me more about what you're studying, because this is an incredible story. You know, it's very rare to find people that change in their lifetime at all. That's a rare thing.
What am I studying?
Yeah, but okay. You know, tell me more about what is a week of learning for you now?
You know, I have absolutely no taste at all. I like it all. I like halacha. I love Gemara. If Gemara is a, you know, kind of something a little more like a refined taste. But of course, the Chumash every week. I said to Rabbi Wilby yesterday, Judaism is like a buffet. If you like mysticism, you can study mysticism. If you like, for sure, you should start with the Chumash. And then and all the commentary, which is the most amazing part, that we can glean all these lessons from the commentary. And of course, the oral law, which influences all the commentary, which we had no idea that it existed. We had no idea that Moshe was given an oral law, which explains everything. You can do nothing without it, but we didn't know it. And now that I know it, I got to just get into it. So I take 2 live classes a week from Or Sameach in Israel with my dear teacher, Rabbi Lubow. I take another live one with Rabbi Felsen and Palo Alto, who's Kollel. It's also on Zoom. We have Tuesday and Thursday study with another rabbi, Rabbi Marcus's dad, in Long Beach. And we're doing Tractate Megillah right now, which is very, very fun. And plus a bunch of podcasts, all of your podcasts, all of your brother's podcasts, all of the Shmat podcast with Dan Coleman. I mean, it just doesn't end.
So this is like an incredible story where you're effectively, you created for yourself almost like a yeshiva. This is a very rigorous schedule of Torah study. You know, how many, more than a dozen classes and podcasts a week. And now you're really rounding out and expanding your Jewish knowledge, your Torah knowledge.
It's a self-serve beverage bar in Northern California. We have a kollel. You really have to do it yourself. But everything's out there. We have Zoom. All the books are there. Take them, open them, read them. Find your own Rav. Find several of them. I know you're not supposed to, but I have a few Ravs. And just have fun. It's gonna blow your mind.
Wow, that's an incredible, incredible story. So, Bruce, give me just a quick snapshot of your story.
I grew up in Northern California in the San Francisco Bay Area. When I was young, I remember having Christmas trees in our house until someone said to my parents, "You're Jewish. You really shouldn't be doing that." I went through your typical Reform Judaism education. I went to Sunday school, Hebrew school. I was bar mitzvahed, and later went to Israel with my confirmation class. Unfortunately, after all that, sadly, my Jewish knowledge surprisingly could barely fill the bottom of a thimble. I'm not blaming my rabbis, teachers, parents, or friends. I take full responsibility because I was not a good vessel at the time. I was into girls, friends, sports, and later my wife, hobbies, my career. For most of my life, I was not a good receptacle of the information. Now, I'm not completely sure how much good information there was coming my way in Sunday school, but whatever there was, one thing was for sure, it was not being presented in a compelling, memorable, inspiring way. In the end, unfortunately, I came out knowing very little about very little. I could say a couple prayers, oftentimes correctly, and I could sing bim bom, bim 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 bom without a song sheet, but that was about it. I can't say my religious feelings really changed as I became an adult. Of course, we had seders and celebrated Hanukkah, but I sure hope no one asked me to tell them any more than the very simplest surface descriptions of the festivals and holidays. Most of my life, I was pretty embarrassed by how little I knew about my own religion. I was embarrassed being around other Jews who knew something about Judaism, and I was even more embarrassed being around non-Jews who knew more about my religion than I did. But luckily, my friend Ron here
got me interested in learning more, and I am forever grateful. The good news is that I rarely ever have those embarrassing moments anymore, so there is a cure. Go and learn. But I'm a testament that it is never too late. In fact, I have learned of many impressive people like Rabbi Akiva, Dan Coleman, not that I put myself in that group, who did not start their journey as a Baal Teshuvah till later in life, and they managed to learn some incredible things.
Well, that's an amazing story. Ron, you said it inspired you.
Yes.
And you began studying. And, you know, first of all, is your study regimen like Ron's, or it's a little bit different?
Similar. Ron pointed me to your podcast and to some videos. And at one point, I was taking classes 6 days a week with Rabbi Marcus. And then I took other classes from Rabbi Felsen, Rabbi Gordon, and of course, I listened to all the Torch podcasts.
And Bruce is amazing. He has this memory that you can't believe. I mean, he's passing up all the people I know. And you could ask him almost anything, he'd come out with it. Because he creates binders, and he reviews, and he does all the stuff. He has a binder now.
Now, Bruce, I want to tell the audience a little bit more about you, because you're one of my heroes. Huh. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I grew up, I was taught Hebrew from very young age, and I was taught Yeshiva from very young age. And I was taught Talmud in fifth grade. You know, you're so delighted over Talmud. You know, we had that in fifth grade.
Unbelievable.
And I went to some of the greatest yeshivas in the world, and I studied under some of the greatest scholars of the century. But you came to this at a very advanced age, relatively.
Yeah, like 61,
I would say. 61. And I hope it's fine for me to say this. You also have a disability.
Yes, I'm legally blind.
Are you comfortable talking about that?
Yes, I'm legally blind. I have a rare degenerative retina disease called retinitis pigmentosa. And basically, every day I have less sight than the day before, and I will ultimately go blind.
Yeah. And the irony is he edited this book.
We'll get to that in a second. Now, but you're, notwithstanding all that difficulty, you're studying and you're accumulating knowledge at a rapid-fire pace.
Well, I just find it so interesting. I mean, the Torah is a otherworldly document, and when I started reading it and learning these things, it just blew my mind. And I just want more and more.
And tell me more about your process, because I know that very often you'll send an email where you like write a transcript of a whole podcast or of a section that you really like, and you have it all organized. The last time you came was a year or so ago, whatever it was, 2 years ago, you showed me this incredible binder that had all your notes, and it was all organized.
Sure.
And it was all by topic and when you heard it and what it was said and just highlighted. It's unbelievable what you've created.
Yeah, well,
tell me more about that process.
I basically knew so little about my religion. And when I started taking classes, when I would hear these things that answered questions for me, I would start to write them down. And pretty soon, I got more and more information where I started to have to start categorizing it into, you know, people, vocabulary, Israel, proofs of Torah, etc. And pretty soon, this document became about 500 pages or more.
I know if I ever want an email from Bruce, I know the simplest way to get an email from you. You ready, Bruce? I'll tell you one of my tricks. I say in the podcast something with a list. Like a list of five things, you know, or seven things, or 10 things created before the Torah.
It'll be transcribed, right? It'll be transcribed and in a book shortly.
And I'll read like four or five of them and then skip the rest of them. And Bruce will always say, no, I need that for my corpus, right?
Because you're
building out this incredible encyclopedia, really. Yeah.
Well, every Shabbat, I take out this book. There's this one section called Points by the Numbers, where anytime I hear you or someone say, this occurred three times, or there are seven of this, or 10 of this, I write it down and I put them in numerical order. And every week I just read it, and it's a great way to learn.
And are you also doing this because you're sensing that your sight is diminishing every day and you want to just kind of memorize and organize it?
If I don't do it now, I won't be able to.
He's always done this. I went to college with this guy. It was a nightmare. He'd have all his notes.
Well, I'm lucky that I have something that creates urgency.
Yes.
To learn.
Yes. And I will tell you something, and I might have told you this in the past, I don't remember, but the Talmud says that there was one of the sages who had a near-death experience. He died and was resuscitated, came back to life. And they asked him to describe what he saw. So we spoke about this in the podcast a few times. He says, well, I saw that it was an upside down world. The lofty ones were lowly and the lowly ones were lofty. And I heard that they were saying, what did he hear? What were the sounds that he heard in heaven? Praiseworthy is he who comes here. Vitalmudobia, and their study is in their hand. And the commentaries there explain that when you write down, you take notes, you take copious notes of all the things that you study. In heaven, when people come there, they always say, what are you bringing with you? Well, where are your notes? Hmm. Where are your notes? The Jewish people always kept notes of their Torah, even before the oral Torah was written. Every single sage, the Rambam tells us, every single sage kept for themselves their own notes. So that way it would be organized for them. And I think you're just an incredible testament of that. Not just to study. A lot of people study, they enjoy listening, and in one ear, out the other, right? You've heard that term. They study and maybe they remember, but it's all a big mush. Talmud says you have to study something 101 times to know it well. You study 100 times, it's good, it's not great. 101 times, well, then you'll remember it. So the idea of repetition and study, oral Torah, it's called the repetition of Torah. You gotta say it over and over and over. And I think you're a real testament to that. And you have this incredible work. And it's also nice to know that you have something tangible that you're holding in your hand, right?
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
No notes.
We say no notes?
No notes.
Well, it's great to have something you're working on that you're passionate about, that's meaningful. I mean, I'm happier than I've ever been, and I just can't wait to get up in the morning and study Torah and work on this book project.
Amazing. Now, I want you to tell me, Bruce, a little bit more about what you were doing before you started becoming a real student of Torah. Today, how many hours a day do you study Torah?
Oh, well, I mean, every night I go to bed, I pray that I'm going to wake up really early. And I love to start listening to your podcasts or other things when it's pitch dark. And I listen for a couple hours and watch the sun come up every day. And sometimes I study for, you know, then I might take a class, come back to studying later. So it varies by the day.
But you're studying hours and hours and hours.
Sure. Well, it's so enjoyable.
Amazing.
Me too.
What an inspiration. Yeah. But you used to be, you told me this, and if you don't want to share it, we could just cut it out of the podcast. You don't worry about that. But you told me that before you got into Torah, you were also very busy with your projects, but your projects were, you were involved in politics, policy. Tell me more about that.
Well, I was a political science major in college. And my second career, I was with a national technical publisher that involved politics. So, I was very into it. I wanted to know what was happening in the world. And I spent hours and hours and hours a day trying to be informed. But after, you know, politics is very frustrating. And after years and years and years of that, I realized that, well, I probably haven't really convinced hardly anybody, you know, to see things the way I do. And at a certain point, I just gave it up and I started studying Torah. And it's a much better use of my time.
Yeah, but what would you do to engage and study politics every day? Like, tell me more about what that
would
be.
I would obviously read. I would listen to the radio. At one point, I created my own computer server where I entered every politician in the Congress, what party they were in, what committees they served in. And every day, I'd listen to the news and I'd come home and I'd type out an email and I'd send it to all Republicans, or I'd type out another one, send it to all Democrats, or I'd send it to people that served on a particular committee. And I was sending out about 10,000 emails a month, I think it was, until I got shut down by the government. They said, it's too much. And like I said, at a certain point, I got interested in Torah and I just lost interest.
So I think it's amazing, you know, because we're friends and I know the basic contours of your story. But, you know, y'all have been best friends for what, 40 years? A long time.
46 years.
A long time. Bruce is able to study all of the congressmen and all of the congresswomen and the senators and the House of Representatives and know which committees everyone's on, kind of have all that organized and be able to send thousands and thousands of emails, barraging them, a barrage of emails. Right? Salvos of emails until they say, yeah, it's enough. Bruce, we got it. It's an organized mind. It's able to kind of amass an enormous amount of data and organize it. He had that quality. And it was for it was for futility, you know, because it doesn't matter. It's, you didn't change any votes or anything like that. Now you're taking that quality and using it in Torah.
A lot better use of my time.
You're studying it all and you're organizing. You're taking these copious notes. You have this incredible binder that gets bigger and bigger every day as you amass more and organize it, you know, all by number, by topic. You select different people and different ideas and different themes, different parts. Everything is nicely organized. So to me, that's beautiful. Now, Ron, you're like the consummate sales guy. You could persuade me to buy anything, right? And ever since you've gotten into Torah, you made it your mission, and I don't want to speak for you, but you tell me if this is true. You made it your mission to try to spread this as much as possible.
For sure. It's just what I do. Well, when I'm excited about something, it's good, whether it's a product I use or whatever it is, and this is the most amazing thing there is. And it's completely not being heard by the majority of Jews in the United States, and it's there. And it's so magnetic. You know, I keep saying this. Maybe I should not keep repeating myself, but if you haven't dug into this, you got to open some books and start. And I know I'm not a great reader. I read very slowly. Sometimes I only read for 10 minutes a day before I go to bed. But it's enough to just – you get a concept. It's like a seed. It'll germinate in you. And pretty soon you're going to want to know more. And it'll just – you start reading the Ramchal and just some of these commentators who are just – they explain everything about heaven, earth, afterlife. We do believe in the afterlife, by the way, if you're Jewish. Going to many places, you don't know that we believe in an afterlife and reincarnation, of course, and all these other things. But yeah, no, that's what I do.
So tell me more about this book project. So I have this book in my hand here called Elevator Pitches for God, 71-page essays by thought leaders on why they believe. So we have 70 different people who have written for your book. It's edited by Bruce Licht and Ron Tartus, Volume 1. So tell me more about the genesis of this book. What inspired you to undertake this project, and more maybe a little bit about what you did and how did you produce this absolute masterpiece?
Ron had the great idea back on January 6, 2022, but there's a story that stretches back about 4 years before that. In 2018, my wife and I were traveling across Croatia with a group of strangers. And on our last night in an outdoor restaurant in Dubrovnik, at a large table of 9 people, someone asked this nice gentleman, Leonard Jacobs, who was sitting across the table from us, "Tell me about your religion, Judaism. I know nothing about it." Of course, our ears immediately perked up. For the next 6 to 7 minutes, Lenny, as he is affectionately called, eloquently said some beautiful things that really resonated with us. I remember my wife and I looked at each other afterwards and said, "Wow, that was so impressive," because neither of us would have known where to start or what to say. Soon afterwards, my good friend Ron little by little introduced me to my Judaism. Then the first pandemic shutdown came along on March 15, 2020, and all of a sudden, new technologies and all this extra time at home converged to alter my world. Ron encouraged me to take some Torah study classes with this new program I had never heard of called Zoom. And he directed me to some great podcasts like yours. So I took lots of classes and I would write down information that resonated with me. And as I said before, the amount of information grew to the point where I had about 500 pages. I kept thinking back to that night in Dubrovnik and that knowledgeable gentleman who so eloquently talked about Judaism. At one point, I started pulling all the information together with ideas from my notes to try to answer the question, "Tell me about Judaism." That is not easy because, as you know, we're a people, a land, a religion, a scripture, a culture, a language, food, and more. How do you boil that down to just a few sentences? Fast forward to January 5th, 2022. Ron and I happen to be along the Texas coast near Houston. Ron and I are huge fans of yours, and Ron set up an appointment on January 6th for us to meet you in person, get a tour of Torch, have some great kosher food, and study with you. Anyway, that night before our meeting, I said to Ron, "If someone asked you, what would be your elevator pitch for Judaism, what would you say?" We went through all of my notes, and we pulled together different ideas to try and create our own elevator pitch, but at the end of the night, we couldn't complete it to our satisfaction. Anyway, the following day, during one of our study sessions with you, I asked you, I said, Rabbi, can you tell me what your elevator pitch would be for Judaism? You said, sure, here it is. And you went on to effortlessly, eloquently, and articulately present your proof. And it was beautiful and to the point. And maybe I'll get you to read that in just a second. Anyway, I then said, what would be your elevator pitch for proof of the existence of God? You said, you know, I've been thinking about that for a long time, and here it is. And you went on to give an incredibly unique idea of what was your proof of God. That night, Ron and I were discussing your elevator pitch for God. Ron and I agreed that if we asked 1,000 people this question, we couldn't imagine that anybody would say the same thing that you did. And then Ron said, wouldn't it be great to go to a large group of interesting people from all around the world and ask them this question and put all their responses in a book? And as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. What a story. I remember that day. We're sitting in the Colo here in Houston, and you asked me this question, and then you asked me, Bruce, yeah, it's like, you mind if I record this? I said, sure. Yeah, I didn't know what y'all had planned, but I see over here you printed it out for me. You actually have the
elevator pitch for Judaism. Wow. And your
I don't think I read this since then. Should I read it?
Sure. Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Elevator pitch for Judaism, January 6th, 2022. Okay, this is a quote. Let's see if it sounds like me. Okay. We are the chosen nation of God. God selected us because of our illustrious antecedents. That sounds like me. To be his nation. And he will be our God. Meaning that we have a direct connection with the creator of heaven and earth. We're the only nation in history who experienced a national revelation when he gave us the manual for living the Torah. He gave us, and he continually endows upon us, the responsibility for all humanity and the guidelines for how to perfect ourselves, to become perfect people, to become angelic people, and how to become the people that are going to bring the world towards its perfection. This definitely is something I said. So we are the vanguard, the Navy SEALs of the mission of bringing progress to humanity, of bringing universal morality, righteousness, and justice to the world. I said this all unprompted.
Yes. You did.
Wow. I'm pretty good. I'd hire this guy.
You should have a podcast.
Maybe. We are the Almighty's people and his representatives in this world. We have a direct line of communication to him, and he is going to give us whatever tools we need to accomplish our mission. We are a nation that lives and breathes meaning. Why was the world created? What are we here for? What are we trying to accomplish? What difference does it make if I live or die? We are the nation that lives to the essence of what the world is all about. We are the only nation that had an exodus from slavery, the only nation that had a national revelation of Mount Sinai, the only nation that the Almighty hears whenever we cry out to him, the only nation that had great prophets like Moshe, amongst others, the only nation that has the Torah, the only nation that has mitzvahs, which are direct instructions from God, the only nation that has endured so much and preserved our core, the only nation in history that has gone back to our land once, let alone twice. We are the oldest nation on earth that has and will be around forever. We are an eternal nation. We are the most unique people out there, and we are bringing the rest of the world with us, dragging them along with us. That sounds like me. Dragging them along with us. They don't know it. They're coming kicking and screaming. We don't even know it sometimes, but we're doing it. Wow, that's not bad.
That should be on the entrance of every shul.
You think so?
Yeah, because it explains it. People don't know most of what you just said.
Wow.
Do we have time to read the your elevator pitch? You could actually only read that bottom big paragraph. I think that I
Which mean, one? This one?
Yeah, that one there. Yeah.
Well, I should mention that Rabbi Wolbe, we're very honored that he wrote one of our closing remarks for the book. So this elevator pitch that he's going to read right now is not in the book. What he wrote was actually much more in depth, very powerful. But this is what he said to us that day.
Okay. This is... It's a lesson, you know, when you say something, someone's recording it somewhere, right?
That's right.
My father used to say that his father, the first thing he taught them as children was the Mishnah. You have to know what's above you. Ayin roa, an eye that sees, ozen shemas, an ear that hears, v'chol d'varecha b'sef v'chotav, and all your deeds are transcribed, are chronicled in a book. So this is an example. This is what I said in January 2022. That's right, 2 years ago. And you have it over here. It's transcribed in front of me. Okay, let's see. I will tell you what I think is the most persuasive proof. I read a lot of literature on the meaning of Torah, and I find that there is a living answer, and then there is a literary answer. Okay, that's interesting phrasing. The literary answer is, well, look at the Torah. Look what the Torah says. Look at the construct of the Torah. Look at the event of the Torah, natural revelation, etc. Look at the instructions of the Torah, etc. I think there's much more powerful proof. And that is, if you ever meet a real, genuine, bona fide Torah scholar, you see a human that is operating as a completely different species as everyone else. Their character is refined. Their behavior is sterling. Their intellect is penetrating. Their insight is overwhelming. And it all packages itself beautifully. You see a human that is perfected. And the only area where we find those things, absolute perfection, is a true Torah scholar. That is a result. The proof is in the pudding, shall we say. You really transcribed it perfectly. Okay, that is what I feel is the most persuasive. It is seen the product of Torah. Wow, I love that.
That's great. And it didn't even make the book. It tells you how great the book is.
Yeah. So this book is, it's not about proofs of Torah or Judaism. It's really about proofs of God.
Right.
So tell me more about the vision for the book and how it developed. So you have this idea to you know, you had this experience in Croatia. This one person is able to speak eloquently just to kind of capture the essence of Judaism in just a few short sentences. And you felt bad that you weren't able to do that, right? I've been around for 50 some odd years and I can't describe my religion.
Right.
And you're like, well, let's try to make a project out of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that launched Bruce in his learning. He realized, I think even more so because he realized this guy could say all of this in 5 minutes. But when we started this book, we thought mistakenly, if I learned yesterday, that our job was to bring the Almighty to the world, you know, ethical monotheism. And we thought, okay, let's just do our job. Let's start at the very beginning. First of all, you know, do you believe or not believe? Let's get proof or evidence or whoever. You know, let's hear from the very smartest people out there that we can get. So we could talk about this if you want. We invited senators and ambassadors and movie stars and great scientists. And surprisingly, a lot of them said, sure, I'll do it. For free. Everyone did this for free. Okay. So they sent us their essay, 500 words exactly, one page. We only gave him one page to prove God. Actually, it was the original name of the book was Proof of God, but we kind of toned it down. It was a little heavy-handed. And the essays that came in were amazing. We did invite the Muslims. We invited Christians and Catholics.
This is not a Jewish thing per se. This is
no, like, it's not a non-sectarian.
Right.
Non-sectarian.
All humans. We believe all humans that believe in God.
That's right.
And you know, certainly the Muslims, we believe the same God as they do.
Exact same God.
The Torah is part of everybody's religious canon.
True. But we have theological differences with the Christians, but not the Muslims. And therefore, you know, we all believe in God. We believe that every human has to believe in God. It's one of the seven Noahide laws. It's universal. And the application layer is not even addressed. The Judaism and Torah is not addressed in this volume. Is that right?
No.
You started.
So mistakenly, we were out there to spread, you know, to start this and then make something on the Noahide laws. Now, I learned yesterday that it's really not our job. We should just be a great example, and that's it. So, in a sense, we've been let off the hook. But anyway, we're already on our mission. So here it is. You get proof of God from scientists. And
so tell me some of the personalities that work for your book.
Well, do you want to?
Well, we have Ambassador David Friedman. We have Senator Joseph Lieberman.
So these people, busy people, famous people, they just took the time to write for your book?
Yeah. At the beginning, you know, Ron and I had a number of meetings. We had a phone conversation with you to first learn, you know, how should we approach these people? You know, what should we say? We also met with Rabbi Marcus, and we got a lot of great ideas from both of you. Mm-hmm. And then we started developing an invitation that we would email out. And there's a gentleman that wrote for our book, an incredibly intelligent man named David Porush, and he helped us in developing our invitation. And we just really were working on getting all of our ducks in a row, and our plan was to launch it on the 1st of Nisan, which was the day that the tabernacle first opened. And we just started sending out invitations, and we just got a great response. You know, obviously we sent out invitations of people that did not respond to us, but sometimes we'd send out an invitation and, you know, 10 minutes later we'd get a response, I'm in.
Right. Wow. You know, we tried to look for emails with these people finder things. And I remember I wanted to have Dennis Prager write an essay, and it was like 1 a.m. And I took an email from probably 20 years ago, and it was like 1:30 a.m. He responded, I'll do it. When do you want it?
Wow.
And it came in like in 5 days. Perfect. You know, the picture, the bio, everything was there. We didn't have to correct a dot on that thing.
So these are very famous people. Dennis Prager, you said. Yeah. Joseph Lieberman, who was a senator for a long time, but also was a vice presidential candidate in 2000, in the year 2000. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said Ambassador Freeman. Who else? Give me some other.
Naomi Freeman, who's, by the way, she is an expert in near-death experiences, which you mentioned earlier. And that is some spooky stuff because this woman went around interviewing hundreds and has read cases of thousands of people who have died clinically and then come back and remembered it and told the story. And I'll tell you what.
And she weaves that into her proof?
She does. So we have very interesting people. She, you probably wouldn't know who she is. I mean, you know, she's as far as names. We have Maya Bialik, Jeopardy host. She was on The Big Bang Theory. We have some other actors as well. We have some great writers who wrote for Friends and other shows.
And what and was the response? People. I think I imagine people love this. I love this idea of going, you know, just going, you know, out of the gate. I loved it.
Yeah, everybody responded to us so favorably.
Those that did respond, either they completely didn't respond. Senator Lieberman wanted a call with us, so he got us on the line. His secretary, Vernal, and said, "Who are you guys?" He goes, "Really?" And we told him, "You know, we're two kind of retired guys. You know, we've been friends for 40 years, just regular guys." And he said, "You know, what do you do?" We said, "Well, we're retired." He goes, "Really? You're retired?" He goes, "I go to work every day. I'm like 80 years old." He goes, "What do you guys do?" I go, "We say Torah." He said, "Join us."
You know, before we reached out too, we were talking to all of our friends and telling them what we're working on to see if they knew anybody that would be appropriate for the book. And at one point, this gentleman, Larry Thal, said, "You know, I know two people that I think would be perfect. One gentleman, his name is Raymond J. Leopold, and he invented all the satellite communications technology that we have. When you pick up a phone and call someone and they answer and there's no delay, that's because of his
I don't pay for Verizon, so I don't know what you're talking about.
And then he also got us a gentleman named Don O'Neill, who's one of the largest fund managers in the world. We wrote in our book that he actively manages billions, but I think he almost manages a trillion. But because he was a little short, we couldn't say trillions. But he wrote a very interesting essay for us. And then as we got
people – very successful people, famous people in all different domains.
Yes. As we then talked to people and got to know them and got their essays, then we would ask them, well, who do you know that would be right for this book? And for Raymond Leopold got us Joe Bingold. There was a gentleman named John McNulty. He was a GM of Intel, among other things. He got us a number of people from the University of Notre Dame. We have the Dean of Engineering, Patricia Culligan. We have the Dean of Science, Santiago Schnell. We have David B. Goh, who's the Professor of Aerospace and Mechanical Engineering.
So this is like the elevator pitch for the elevator pitch. Like the book, if you think about it, like imagine someone is wrestling with these questions. And really, we all are, even believers and non-believers alike.
Sure.
We're always, this is a central question of our life.
Right.
You got the opportunity in this book
right.
to take, you know, 70 elevator trips. Like imagine like how would that be if you walk into an elevator and you see, you know, Joseph Lieberman or Alan Dershowitz or Dennis Prager and you say, tell me about God. Like, why do you believe in God?
Just like we did with you.
Yeah.
Spread it out.
And
right.
This is their answer. You get to hear from these incredibly accomplished people.
Right. We have newspaper editors, David Suisa. We also have a lot of women in this book too, by some of my personal favorites, and if you read them and slow down, they're just amazing. Idi Kay, who runs Base Hano, who's an amazing modern-day sage, I would call her, amazing rabbis. Lawrence Kellerman, my man, Rabbi Breidowitz from Warsamea.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Who, by the way, I mean, his essay is very simple. This guy's brilliant off the charts, and his essay is so understandable and so easy.
Yeah.
Giants in Space, Gerald Schroeder, nuclear physicist.
So this is just an incredible accomplishment, and I want to give you two a major yashar koach for doing this, because this book could really change the world. Because again, everyone is sharing their perspective from a different angle, and you know, not everyone will be influenced by each one of the arguments. You sent me one of the arguments, the logician.
The guy Bruno Paleo.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No.
He's a logician. And he's talking about the ontological argument. I don't even know what the ontological means.
Yeah, we had to look that up too. Right.
So I'm like, I don't know if that moves the needle for me, but
right.
for the super, super bright and super advanced, intelligent people.
Yeah, right. We loved it when people brought in their life experience into their essays. We have the Supreme Commander of NATO.
James Stavridis.
Ari Sasher, who invented the Iron Dome.
So this is just incredible.
It's crazy.
It's incredible.
It's crazy.
And you guys just pulled it off. And the book is gorgeous. Like, this doesn't really play out well.
Oh, we'll talk about the printer. We should talk about that in a sec, because that was amazing how we found this printer and how that whole thing worked out.
There's this incredible art, and just the pages feel, you know, just incredible quality, and the pictures, and it just pops.
Yeah, because that's a Kiddush Hashem. This was a tribute to the Almighty. We wanted the best paper. We wanted the best color. We wanted the best printing press in the world. We wanted everything we wanted had to be the best. How could we not, right?
We were not willing to cut any corners.
It had to be the best. I'll tell you a story. We went to publishers and self-publishers, and as it turned out, economically, it was not going to work out to print a really beautiful color book. It's very expensive to do that. So we had to self-publish it. I've never been a publisher. So we had to learn the business, find the printers, the layout people, the editor, copy editors, all this. Anyway, we did it all. And I called this print broker and I said to him, hey, you know, these guys, they print in like Turkey and South Korea and all over the world. They print millions and millions of whatever they print. And I said, who's the best printer in the world? And he said, gosh, you know, it's probably this woman-owned business in Shanghai. She's the best. Their quality is so high, we don't even check it. We don't even fly over there to check it. I said, funny, I picked the same lady. It's Kin Printing. And that was one of the coincidences. We were just like, wait. And by the way, we should talk about that too. All the strange things, call it coincidences or whatever you want, that have happened in this book.
Tell me.
Okay. Strange things that have happened in the book. You want to start with?
Well, there's so many. I know when we met with you originally, Rabbi, you said, you know, you really have to get important people. You said if you could get Rabbi Breidowitz at Or Sameach, that would open some doors. So Ron and I thought about it, and we thought, how are we going to get this giant Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz to write for us? And we had a plan that we would write an invitation, and we would say that you were supporting us and Rabbi Marcus was supporting us, and then we would send it to someone else and get them to be a part of it. And we had like five steps to get to the top. And then one day Ron heard a podcast of Rabbi Breidowitz that was on topic. And he said, Bruce, why don't you transcribe this and we'll send it to Rabbi Breidowitz to see if he's interested. So I transcribed it. And as Ron said, at the very beginning, the title of our book was Proof of God in 500 Words. And that meant not 501 and not 499. Every essay at the time had to be 500 words. So what happened is I talked to you, Rabbi, and you gave me Rabbi Shmuley Botnick's number. And I called Shmuley. It wasn't a great time for him to write for our book, but he actually gave me Rabbi Breidowitz's email. And I wrote Rabbi Breidowitz, and I sent him this transcription that I wrote of this lecture that he gave. And the lecture came out to be exactly 500 words. And I said to him, Rabbi, is this a coincidence or is there more involved here? I mean, it's exactly 500 words. And he says, I can't argue with you. The fact that you found a lecture of mine that was exactly 500 words is an elevator pitch for God in itself. And I'm going to write for your book.
Wow.
There were so many things.
Did he ultimately use what you wrote for him?
Yeah, he adapted it. But he was very generous with his time, and we're just thrilled to have him in the book.
Yeah, one of my favorite essays too.
So many cases like that. You know, one thing that got me interested in Judaism was many, many years ago, Ron gave me a video by Rabbi Lawrence Kellerman, who I think studied under your grandfather.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this video, it's called What Exactly Happened at Sinai, just blew my mind to the extent that I transcribed that video. And it was 17 pages long. So I sent this to Rabbi Kellerman and I said, you know, we're doing this book and we saw this lecture, what exactly happened at Sinai. And it was just incredible. Here's the transcription. Is there any way you could refine this into an elevator pitch for our book? And he said to me, he said, Bruce, I've spent my whole career using words. And in order to come up with that video on what exactly happened at Sinai, I had to throw out thousands and thousands of words to come up with that. So I just don't know how I could ever get it into a 500-word elevator pitch. And actually, over the next almost a year, we had 17 exchanges back and forth with him. And on April 21st, 2023, he wrote me a letter and he said, Dear Bruce, God is on your side. I mean, that was just unbelievable to read that. He said, he gave me double pneumonia, which basically
stopped me in my tracks for 2 weeks and allowed me to get done all the projects I couldn't get done over the last couple of years, and your elevator pitch is attached.
Wow.
There was one other gentleman, the logician, Bruno Wolzenlager Paleo, who I sent him an invitation, and he actually opened it up on the night that his mother was on her deathbed. And he had spent his whole life being a logician, doing proofs of God. And he just said, it's just amazing. This is my destiny to write for this book. And he actually dedicated his essay to his mother.
Yeah. On the printing end, there were some really strange things that happened. We tried to get a layout person who was recommended in the industry, 30 years of experience. 2 days after we give him the job, he is in a bad accident. He almost loses an eye. So we get another person, and 2 days after he got the job, he has a heart attack. At this point, Bruce and I stopped and looked at each other and said, okay, what do you want us to do? What do you want us to do? So we got some more recommendations from our copy editor, Ruth Kahan, who's amazing, and we got Shawnee Cooper. And when it came back, the colors, the gradients, the layout, the fonts, and that's why people look at this book and go, wow, this is really, really looks great. And that's Shawnee. She just nailed it. So that was another really – oh, we got one more for you. You want to hear this? So Andy Arnovitz is one of the great artists of the world, and she generously gave us – she didn't know who we were. We emailed her, and she said, you can use all my – I love the project. You can use all my art for free, okay? So you're going to see this beautiful work from Andy Arnovitz throughout the book. Well, we chose – of all the artists in the world, we chose two images, one on the front, one on the back of the book. The guy who sits next to me at my shul, Bobby Lent, looks at the book when it came out and said, you know, I own that print, that painting. It's in my house. Now, you tell me what the odds of all the artists in the world, all the paintings in the world, that we chose the one that the guy who sits next to me, my chavrusa, my dear friend Bobby, has in his house.
It's just a wink from the Almighty.
That's what it is, right?
I'm with you guys.
I mean, is this oh, it goes on and on and on. And we just, you know, yeah,
that's the
crazy
way this whole project felt. You know, if you think about it, we have 70 authors that we had to locate, deal with, edit their essays. We had to lay it all out. We had to create a website. We created a nonprofit that the book is held in. It's called For Good and For All, Inc. We had to create the nonprofit. We did all this within 2 years. It's really amazing.
Get it shipped, get it published.
I really don't know how we did it.
You have to get all these people to write when they're all super busy. Super accomplished. You're not even paying them.
Oh, the Almighty took care of that. These people wanted to write. I mean, the people wanted to write wrote it, and they reacted, and they were fantastic. And a lot of people chose not to write.
I will say that I'm honored that you wrote to me when you said, mm-hmm. You said, Rabbi, everyone else has a limit, 500 words. You could write unlimited, which is good. You can have a hard time writing 500
and your
words.
Your proof is amazing. I mean, it's like yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 punch.
Yeah. When it came in, I said, Bruce said, what do you think? I can't say it here on the podcast. I said, it's amazing. It just knocked it out of the park, which was great. And also Rabbi Kellerman did write the closing remarks. We gave him a few extra.
Mine's like an elevator pitch, but if the elevator breaks and you're ringing the button to get the fire department there.
No.
A little more time.
It's like
a 100-story building.
Yeah. It's not that. It's still pretty brief.
Yeah.
Still pretty brief.
Wow. So what's the vision for the future? Because here it says volume one. Are you intending to do volume two, maybe other things?
Yeah, we're in the future going to be doing volume two and volume three. I'm just starting to work on it now. At this point, we just want people to learn about the book and promote this book, and then we're going to move on to the next one.
We're also starting our own podcast series, which I hope torchweb.org will host. On the inspired by the book, where we interview the authors. Dishmoo's on the podcast. It's by Noah Greenfield, and Scott Kahn is our producer in Israel. And I wanted to tell you that my father-in-law opened this book. He was one of the first people to read it, and he started reading. And when he hit Prager's essay, he stopped and he said, "I believe. I don't need to read anymore." He goes, "Now what do I do?" So this
go through the book without reading mine, though, at the end.
He has
to read mine.
Right.
You can't skip mine.
He'll get there.
Right. Yeah.
Tell him to start from the back of the book.
Yeah.
It's like the Wolby. With a name like Wolby, it's a W.
You're always the last, right?
Always last. Start from the back.
That's right. Listen to your podcast in reverse. It'll be better.
That's how
I listen to it. Doesn't seem to make any sense, does it? Right. So anyway,
are you saying your father-in-law was not a believer beforehand?
No, I don't think so. No, for sure he was not. And I mean, that's pretty powerful. When that's one of the best things I've heard, because that's vindication, validation. This book actually worked. It did what we were supposed to. Was because no one's heard these arguments.
And again, there's so much variety. So if one essay doesn't speak to you, you're only investing one page. What's it going to take? 5, 6, 7 minutes?
Not
to
even.
An idea that could change your life?
Not even. Two,
and if you're only just one, just turn a page. There's 70 of them. It's unbelievable.
Right.
70 different angles.
Right.
To be able to answer the most important question. And that's, why are we here? Where did it all get started for? What's the purpose? Is there an absolute truth? Is there an existence of God? Is there absolute morality? Is there something that I have to do, or else I have to suffer the consequences, or not? But that's the most important question we have to ask, and we have to get an answer to. We have to live our life accordingly. And this book is a smorgasbord of these incredible, incredible essays. And again, it's the beauty of it is that probably each one of these arguments can be expanded into a whole book, because you bring in all the proofs and all the elements of it, but here it's just distilled for you.
Yeah, people don't have time. Yeah, give it to me quick. Right.
Yeah, it's like TikTok, right?
One guy who's
everyone wants a little sound bites. It's like sound bites.
Yeah, you can read one essay a day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's a great coffee table book.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. Also large and big and gorgeous.
And it's also available.
Amazing. You guys did a great
thank
job.
Thank you. Really,
it's also everyone go right now to Amazon. Buy this book. Buy this book. I don't get any royalties. I wholeheartedly endorse this project. I feel fortunate I played a small part in getting it off the ground. I'm very proud that I was able to write for the book. And what can I say? You guys did a great job.
Right. And if you could send us $5 or whatever you have, we are a nonprofit. We paid out of our pocket for all of this stuff. And we'd like to work on Volume 2. We would like the podcast. We do an amazing amount of work for very little money. It is completely tax deductible.
Our website is EP4G.com, standing for Elevator Pitches for God.
Wow. You guys did a great job. The book is called Elevator Pitches for God, 71-page essays by thought leaders on why they believe, Volume 1, edited by Bruce Licht and Ron Cardos, and Bruce Licht and Ron Cardos are here. You're in the Torch Center, and I have the book in my hand. We have a few copies over here.
It's also available in an audiobook and in a Kindle version.
Yeah, and swing by the Torch Center if you want to take a look at it, because we have a few copies over here. Y'all were kind enough to give us a few copies over here. And what can I say? I wish you guys to have tremendous success in getting the book out there. I hope it really makes an impact. I think it has the ability to. I encourage everyone to go get this book right now. Read it. Peruse it. You don't have to read it linearly, because again, it's each one is its own self-contained essay. But Volume 1, I hope to see Volume 2, Volume 3, and so on. And what can I say?
And we hope that everybody who hears this will help us get the word out there. You know, maybe buy a couple, give them to your temple,
your church,
get some for the hotel in your area to put in the drawers by the bed. Mm-hmm. We've got to get this out there.
Yeah. Box stores, hospice, hospital waiting rooms, doctor waiting room. This is...
That's when people are receptive to the idea.
Yeah, exactly. the Army, the U.S. Army. Yeah, you
exactly.
Know.
Send us to the trenches.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Thank you so much, guys, for coming. Again, you want to share your email address? People can reach out for you. Reach out to you?
Sure. It's ron@ep4g.com.
That's only – that's what – the E, just not elevator. It's just E.
EP4G.
Yeah, right. You could also type out elevatorpitchesforgod.com and you'll get to the same place.
But EP4G, so we have ron@ep4g.com and bruce@ep4g.com. My email address is, if you want to reach out to me, it's rabbi@wallwithjesus.com. Thank you so much, Ron. Thank you so much, Bruce, for coming to the Torch Center, for sharing your story, and for undertaking this mission, because this is a mission that will, in my opinion, it's going to pave the path for you to heaven in Olam Haba, because you guys did something to say, I want to do something to bring Hashem's name to the world. I want to reveal Hashem's name to the world. So really, big yashar
kov. Thank you. Thank you. That's really kind words.
What can I say? Anything that I can do to help get this book out there, get Volume 2, Volume 3, get the book, buy the book, support them. These are great people. These are heroes. These are leaders of our, leaders in their communities, and people that we can really look up to. Their stories are incredible. They grew up really without a strong, robust Torah education. They self-trained and they took upon themselves the initiative to do this incredible project. Thank you so much for coming to the Torch Center, and best of luck in the book, and bravo.
It's been an honor. Thank you. Thank you.